Bill asked me to talk just because of my experiences in the FDA during a lot of the time when this whole antibiotic resistance issue was developing. But I thought I'd go back and just for the rest of the session, kind of set up what the regulatory history is. And I'm happy to answer any questions that folks might have about why did the FDA make that decision or why didn't they do something else. So, so here's the history. It really started out in about 1968. People had figured out by that time that the use of antibiotics in animal feeds gave them a production advantage and that it increased growth rate and improved feed efficiency. Kind of an interesting story behind that is that shortly after World War II, there was a shortage of animal protein, and producers were used to feeding their animals some animal protein in their diet. And when they had to switch to a pure vegetable diet, they didn't see the same kind of productivity in the animals. And so they coined the term animal protein factor. That's what it was. That was some mysterious ingredient in animal protein that improved the growth rate and feed efficiency. And it wasn't until sometime later that they actually figured out that that was vitamin B12, I think it was. But what they found was that when they were feeding fermentation products from the production of tetracyclines, they got this growth increase, and that was even better than the animal protein factor. So from there it caught on and it became widespread, feeding antibiotics in feed. Well, there was a committee in England at the time that was looking at this stuff and saying, well, is this a good practice or a bad practice? And then the whole issue of antibiotic resistance started to show up as science started to uncover the fact that bacteria could transfer resistance to other bacteria. And so they turfed it over to this other committee called the Swan Committee. And the Swan Committee looked at the whole issue of feeding antimicrobials to animals and decided that this was not good for the animals and it was not good for humans and that it had the potential for producing antimicrobial resistance. So they recommended a ban on antibiotics in the feed of chickens and pigs and basically said that no antibiotics should be given unless they are prescribed by a veterinarian. The United States took note of this, of all of these activities, and started looking at the way that antibiotics were used in the United States, formed a committee that was comprised of scientists from the FDA, but also from USDA and from CDC and from outside industry to really delve into this. And it took them several years, but they came to the conclusion that antibiotics should not be fed to animals for non-therapeutic purposes. And they made this recommendation to the commissioner of the FDA, and the commissioner of the FDA then directed back then it was the Bureau of Veterinary Medicine, but the Center of Veterinary Medicine, to start the procedures for withdrawing the approval of these drugs in animal feed. And so the FDA published its proposal to restrict subtherapeutic drugs, mainly penicillin and tetracycline, and then Congress intervened and said, wait a minute. Before you go any further, we want to see all the scientific evidence. We want you to conduct studies, and you are to hold in abeyance any further activity to withdraw these antimicrobials. So FDA did that. They contracted with the National Academy of Sciences to do a study and provide recommendations and also to give guidance on any research that should be conducted to improve the scientific background. So National Academy of Sciences did do the study. They said, look, there's just not enough information here for us to make any kind of informed decision. We have no direct evidence that it does cause problems, health problems in humans. On the other hand, we cannot rule out that possibility. The evidence isn't there and you need more studies. And they also said, we're not even sure you can do the kind of studies that would give us the kind of information that we need. They are technically difficult to run. So a number of other government offices weighed in. The Office of Technology Assessment with the White House did a report on drugs in livestock. Another report, the National Research Council reported that, again, in an independent report, said that the information did not prove or disprove human health effects. There just wasn't any good information out there to actually show harm to human health as a result of these antibiotics in food. So it's 1981, and what started in 77 is still in abeyance. There's no movement on FDA to withdraw the subtherapeutic drugs. But in order to provide more information, the Congress said, well, we'll give you some money, about $1 million, to do a more definitive study, and in the meantime, hold any withdrawal of the approvals in abeyance. So it's 1981, contracted with Seattle King County to do a study, and that study, I don't know if I have that in here. That was Seattle King County, and they requested additional National Academy. You'll see National Academy of Sciences, National Research Council throughout this. Several times the FDA went back and forth asking for more information or if they could provide some recommendation. And they did a draft environmental impact assessment on removing these subtherapeutic antibiotics. I'm going the wrong way. Okay, so FDA sponsored a study, no regulatory action was taken, even though the study, the King County study, showed that for the first time that pathogens were transferred between humans and animals, and animal-derived foods. They actually went out and surveyed meat and found the same organisms in the meat that they found in people. They found the same resistance patterns in Campylobacter that they found in people. So it was clear from that study that animals were developing Campylobacter were developing resistance from the use of subtherapeutic antimicrobials, and those resistant organisms were being transferred to humans. Despite that, FDA did not take regulatory action. So the Natural Resources Defense Council petitioned the FDA to withdraw these drugs on the basis that they presented an imminent hazard to public health. That petition was taken up by congressional committees. The FDA held separate hearings on that. And in 1985, Department of Health and Human Services denied the NRDC petition to withdraw based on imminent hazard. And I don't know why that was, but I have some pretty good ideas as to why that was. And it has to do with law, the legal hurdles that you need to get through to declare imminent hazard. So in 1987, FDA goes back to the National Academy of Sciences and asked for a quantitative assessment on the risk of subtherapeutic uses, and that National Academy asked the Institute of Medicine to take on that. And again, in 1989, IOM decides or concludes that there is no definitive research that these drugs are actually causing harm in humans, although, once again, they say we cannot rule it out, and we think that the possibilities are certainly there. So this is about the time that I came to Washington. This is the year for me was 1994, and at that time there was great fervor in the media that nobody was developing any new antimicrobials to treat human diseases. And as a result, we needed to really preserve all of the antibiotics that we currently had approved because if resistance develops, we are really at the end of the antibiotic era and people will start dying again. So in 1994, there was an advisory committee that I was brand new to government and was at this advisory committee as the director of the FDA Center for Veterinary Medicine. We were considering whether or not to approve fluoroquinolones for use in poultry, not as a subtherapeutic, but as a water additive to treat diseases, respiratory diseases in poultry, both chickens and turkeys. The advisory committee, which was made up of not only the Veterinary Medicine Advisory Committee, but also the Center for Drugs, and their Infectious Disease Subcommittee, and the Centers for Disease Control were part of that panel. In the end, they agreed that fluoroquinolones could be approved, but they should be limited to prescription only. There should be no extra labeled use, and resistance should be monitored after the approval. So in 1995, FDA did approve fluoroquinolones for use in poultry and established the National Antimicrobial Resistance Monitoring System, or NARMS, and that was to fulfill the requirement that resistance should be monitored after the approval of these fluoroquinolones. The WHO convened in 1997 and came up with a strong statement saying the use of any antimicrobial agents for growth promotion in animals should be terminated if it's used in human therapeutics or known to self-select cross-resistance to antimicrobials used in human medicine. And then in 1999, the first report from the National Research Council, this time saying, we do think that there is sufficient evidence now to make the direct link between the use of antibiotics in food animals and microbial resistance to those antibiotics in human diseases. So this was the first report where sufficient evidence was available and they could make that definitive statement. In 2000, FDA was finding resistance in Campylobacter to fluoroquinolones. That was one of the organisms we were concerned about because about 60% of the people who develop enteric diseases, whether Salmonella or Campylobacter, those are the two big ones, and go to a physician, are given fluoroquinolones. Whether they're the drug of choice or not, that's what they get. And so resistance in Campylobacter to fluoroquinolones would mean that there would be therapeutic failures. So the FDA announced that it was going to withdraw. In 2003, FDA started to require that microbial resistance be part of the human food safety evaluation. So before that time, when you want your drug approved and it's going to be used in a food animal, you have to do studies to show that the residues of those drugs will not be harmful to the public. Now, the FDA was saying, in addition to that, if it's an antibiotic, we want information on resistance that will help us determine how this drug can be appropriately used, and that was GFI, or Guidance for Industry, number 152. Subsequently, an IOM report comes out, recommends that FDA ban all growth promotion use of antimicrobials if they are also used in humans. In 2004, there was a GAO, Government Accountability Office, report that FDA should expedite its risk assessment of antibiotics used in animals that are critically important to human health and restrict or prohibit animal uses in order to safeguard human health. At that time, we weren't approving very many antimicrobials because we were tied up in all of this scientific debate. In 2005, so it started in 2000, 5 years later, FDA was successful in withdrawing fluoroquinolones. That was millions of dollars later, at least by FDA, and I don't know how much the industry spent on defending that, but it was a very, very arduous process. It took 5 years to get to that point. So it just gives you a sense of when you try and withdraw a drug, it is a very laborious process if the company decides that they are going to contest. 2011, FDA issues Guidance 209 on the judicious use of medically important antimicrobial drugs in food-producing animals, basically saying that the FDA feels that it is not a prudent use to use drugs for growth promotion and non-therapeutic purposes. Also that antibiotics should be dispensed through veterinarians and there should not be over-the-counter sale of antibiotics. It is a guidance document. It has no binding components to it, so it is just mainly a statement. Finally, in 2011, the Codex Alimentarius Commission adopts guidelines for risk analysis of foodborne antimicrobial resistance, basically using the same approach that the FDA is using in evaluating their drugs, antibiotics for approval. So I think that's a whirlwind history of the that's the history so far, and it's still being written.
We have time for a couple of questions, and there will be time at the end. Any questions for Steve?
So basically it seems that all the studies that were done, have you read all the, they seem like they're pretty inconsistent then. Because I struggle to get, I want to be as informed as possible.
Well, here's, you know, what is hard. I'll tell you how I see it. Is that it, you can show all the steps, but it's very difficult to show actual harm from these because we're talking about things like penicillin, tetracyclines, sulfonamides, drugs that aren't used to treat enteric infections in humans. So you have salmonella that's resistant to tetracycline. It doesn't really make any difference in the treatment because you're not going to treat that patient with tetracycline. So the question really becomes, at least in my mind, the question becomes, are these bacteria transferring their genes to other pathogens in humans for which those drugs are important therapeutically? And that's what I think has really been hard to, you know, that's that last link, is what is the actual harm? With fluoroquinolones, we had it was very clear that fluoroquinolones were being used to treat patients that had developed campylobacteriosis. And so you could say, if they're resistant, then those patients are being harmed by virtue of the fact that the medications that they're getting are not effective. Yes?
But there is evidence, right, that they are being, you know, for instance, the recent carbial ground turkey was a salmonella in that type of system.
Yes.
So there is evidence that these organisms are getting into the
body. Yes, that's true. The question is, are those salmonella that are resistant, are they resistant to any of the drugs that would be used to treat those patients? And my guess is I haven't looked at the resistance pattern on that salmonella, but unless it's got a resistance gene for fluoroquinolones or some of the third generation cephalosporins, my sense is that those patients were not harmed by the fact that those salmonella were resistant.
There was, I said in the presentation yesterday, that talked about the fact that the plasmids are more toxic.
They are, yeah.
So there is, you know, it may not have been this time, but there is
one. Exactly. That's exactly right. I mean, that's the big, it's very feasible and probable that that's occurring. It's just that we have not been able to take that, take that from, I see this plasmid moving, it's gone to this organism that's now in a human, and that human is not, or that person is no longer able to be treated with drugs that they would normally be treated with. That's the real hard part to prove in this case.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.